Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And very good evening to you from the Radio Verulam studios on Hatfield Road in St Albans. It's The Parent Show. We're here every Thursday night from 8 till 9 p.m. And this evening, just like every other Thursday night, we've got some fantastic guests. And we'll be talking about something very, very interesting, which is the well-being of our teenage children. Which factors exactly promote and hinder well-being in teenage children? We've got great guests. We've got Ray McGovern, who many of you will know is the head teacher of one of the largest secondary schools in West Hart, St George's. We've got Paul Brooks, who's the head of Luton Athletics Club, and Lauren Gafer, who many of you will know as the fairy food mother, who's going to be giving us some nutritional advice when it comes to feeding our teens, or at least what to leave in the fridge so they can pick things out. So we're going to kick the conversation off with Ray McGovern, who we're hoping is going to be on the phone. Are you there, Ray?
I am. Thank you very much. And it's very nice to speak to you this evening and your listeners.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the show. Many people know your name, Ray.
I'm not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Because you took over St George's, was it a couple of years ago? Took over the leadership.
It was 2 years ago in April that I took over from the previous head, Norman Hoare, who had been head for about 25 years.
And how's it all going?
Oh, strongly. We got inspected at the beginning of this academic year under the new framework, and we got an outstanding for that. So I think we're doing a really good job, and obviously we try to keep doing as good a job as we possibly can, despite sometimes the politicians trying to get in our way.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. We try and steer away from that one, Ray.
Well done, Ray. That's great news about your outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Now, Ray, as one of the largest secondary schools and one that's, you know, very well known in the area, we want to hear your views about generally teenage well-being. We hear a lot of stuff in the press and media just recently about, you know, they talk about things like a ticking time bomb when it comes to teenage mental health, and how schools perhaps aren't doing their job when it comes to, you know, promoting well-being as well as they could be. And we know as parents as well that, well, teenage years are always a transitional and difficult time, but perhaps I think the media has made us feel that they're under more pressure than perhaps they've been in the past. What's your sort of general view on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really interesting because there's quite a few things in play there. I mean, just as part of an introduction, I'm a father of three. My eldest has just finished university. My daughter's currently going through her GCSEs, and my middle son's at university. You know, so I'm living with that reality. As well as being the head teacher at a school of 1,300 pupils. And so I see it from different aspects. But I'd also emphasise that even in that situation, I and the staff at my school are experts in emotional well-being. We're teachers. We are trained to be professionals at teaching young people. But part of that job is also about building a relationship that promotes a healthy attitude, both towards learning and towards each other and towards society, and sort of Britishness, as the government might call it at the moment. I think that the press angle, that's really interesting, because of course when we get exam results, the press are always telling us about actually how badly our children are performing. So that drives down the young people's self-esteem. It drives down our self-esteem as a society, and that impacts on our emotional and mental welfare. We lose confidence in what we're doing. So the press can be sometimes a little bit of a devil's advocate in both directions when it chooses to. And of course, it's not just all down to what schools do. We're only part of the picture. What we can do is do our bit, but for anyone to suggest that somehow any school and schools collectively could overcome this challenge that we have as a society about young people's mental health and well-being and emotional health just isn't true. We have to do it together as a society. We need to change some of our values about what we aspire to, because if we always aspire to academic excellence, then those that aren't academically very able feel left behind, self-esteem gets impacted, and therefore they don't feel as valued as part of their community, as part of their society, as they should. You know, so it's a complex picture, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
And when we talk about well-being, what are the sort of dimensions of it? You know, it's a big word, isn't it? But in the context of a school, what are the sort of the areas that you consider to be important when it comes to well-being?
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely interesting because I've worked in lots of different areas, some in very socially deprived areas where you might see mental welfare being affected by different things than you might see in an area like Harpenden. So people will often talk about poverty and how being brought up in a household where it's either dysfunctional or you've got a parent who's either a substance abuser or there's violence going on in the home, that those will be stress raisers. And those are the sort of obvious negative ones. But actually in a town like we live in, one of the big stress raisers is our pressure for our young people to succeed in everything they do. We're so passionate about them succeeding and doing exceptionally well and preparing them for the next stage of life. We put them under a lot of pressure. And that's probably the area that we see as a school. Being a highly academic and very highly performing school, we are very fortunate. We have very able students and students that work exceptionally well and they want to succeed. But of course, they're very, very busy.
But is there any sort of choice there for any of us? I mean, if we sort of relax our approach to, say, them doing their GCSEs or their revision, I mean, there'll be so many parents listening who have trusted their children to get on with their revision and they haven't done so well in their exams. There's others who think they're worried of putting the pressure on, they're getting them private tuition and all the rest of it. But would you agree that we're all in this rat race that we can't escape from? These children have to do these exams.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the point that I was making at the beginning, is the fact that this has to be, some of this has to be about what our values are as a society.
Yeah.
We obviously want our young people to be well educated, but there's a level at which when they've been driven to not just academic education, but being involved in music, sport, drama, that we have to make sure that suits the personality of the child we're working with. So, yeah, we are in a sort of a hamster wheel where we're all running around. And, you know, I've literally just come back from London, coming back on the train from St Pancras and watching all these people on their iPhones doing their emails. You know, everyone's very stressed and having to keep up with that. But that's where society's values may have to say, actually, do you know what? There is an important time for us to be still, be quiet, be reflective, take opportunities to talk to each other, to connect with the society, as opposed to just being having an existence in it. And actually, the NHS has 5 steps to mental welfare, and one of those is about connecting with others and connecting, making good connections with other people. So it's not just about driving. It is also about what are we driving for, and is driving for relationships, being part of society in a more general way rather than just making money, producing goods for consumers, making the most we can so we can get the biggest car or the most expensive trainers. Is that a healthy lifestyle for us as a society? And there's nothing wrong with those things. But if that's all we're focused on, then do we lose something along the way?
Now, I really like your point that it's perhaps the parents' role to listen to what their children are actually interested in and passionate about and follow that rather than, I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure for them to play things like, you know, rugby and all the traditional sports. And if some children don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because St George's is a boarding school, as most people might know, but actually for some it comes as a surprise that we operate a boarding facility for about 100 students in the school. And one of the things we do when parents want their child to come to boarding is I interview the child on their own without the parent there. because I want to establish, actually, will the child be happy in that environment? Because the parent might want it. It might even be almost necessary because of the things that the parent has. But actually, the welfare of that child has to come first. And if they were going to be unhappy in that environment, then I would want to make sure that that comes first and that's addressed.
But one of the things I was going to ask you is how do you measure well-being within your school?
You can see lots of indicators, and we see those indicators, and I think this is interesting. This isn't just a time bomb for our young people. This is a time bomb for most of us as adults as well, because we're responding to the changes in society. But you can see those things. So the indicators for most schools would be things like if you have an increase in the number of confrontations in the playground, so angry arguments, people having fights, that would be something that would alert you to there's something not right in the relationship welfare of the student body. Seeing students who are sad, depressed, emotionally volatile, students whose self-esteem is very, very low, who find it difficult to concentrate. And of course, the problem with all of those markers are they're also part of growing up and being a teenager. But you see, one of the things that we see in education more generally is the number of young people who are suffering from clinical depression is significantly on the rise.
What would you consider to be the reason for that?
There's a sort of disconnection in terms of what happens in society for young people. When most of your listeners, and certainly in my day, I would go out and play with my friends on my own. I would be able to grow and develop away from the supervisory eyes of my parents. And therefore, I got a sense of myself and my own needs and how to manage those relationships in my own terms. But because of our anxieties about how safe our children will be in society nowadays, children get less opportunity to do that. And also they spend a lot of time, and without being stereotypical about it, but boys spend a lot of time in front of TV screens, video screens, and therefore the type of emotional energy that they're generating internally will be orientated on very, very solitary things. They will go through an emotional high and low. So if they're playing a game, they'll go through an emotional high and low, but actually not then be able to express that. You know, you see dads watching the football shouting at the television, but actually the television's not listening. You know, so children have that as well. But the big thing is about life. We need to feel that we're part of a society. And I think it's increasingly difficult for children to see what their place is in society. Will they have a job? What's that job going to look like? How many jobs am I going to have? How am I going to prepare myself for those? Will I get the 11, 12, 13 GCSEs that school expects, that my parents expect, that society expects? And if I don't, am I a failure? So a lot of it is generated by the social pressures that we have in modern life.
And it's a huge amount to ask your teachers to be on top of, isn't it, Ray? I mean, you sound extremely well-versed and you sound like you're really watching out for your students. But how can all teachers know this kind of information on top of the normal everyday curriculum material?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we do as a school, and most schools will do this in some form or another, and I think St. George's is particularly good at it, is that your pastoral system in the school will do that. So you will have an adult who is primarily concerned with the welfare of a group of students. Now, most people will understand that's the form teacher. In our case, we have heads of houses. In other schools, they might have a head of year. And part of their professional development is to be able to, and part of a teacher's training is to understand the emotional and development of a child and how that impacts on learning. But keeping up with social pressures is about continually training professionals, allowing them to share good practice, seeing good practice elsewhere and bringing it into other schools, sharing it amongst the schools. We have a collaboration of the schools in St Albans and Harpenden, and we will talk about those things so that we see other trends. We know that there's an increase in our concerns about mental health across the whole area. It's not just one school or another, as in a general sense. So we do that in terms of making sure that young people have a connection with an adult who's specifically looking at that as that more holistic, rounded view of education for them, not just about how they're doing in a particular subject. And the other thing that we do is through our PSHE programs and through the other opportunities that we give young people is to give them the opportunities to remain mentally healthy. Although too much sport or forced sport in terms of aspiring for a child to participate at a particular level in a particular sport might be great for some, it might not be great for others. We know that sport is a very good thing for our physical health.
Absolutely, and we'll be talking
to... Being physically healthy is good for our mental health, but it's also good for making relationships and feeling part of a community.
Absolutely.
You know, a team is a community.
And I think from what you're saying, it's all about balance. And I suppose the parent's job is making sure there is balance between all those different
factors.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really... I find that aspect really interesting. I was watching a video on a website called TED TV, which viewers might know about, because there's no one model that's going to be completely right for every student. Different people, if you're an introvert, you need time and space on your own. If you're an extrovert, you need time to be with other people. And I think the part of our parenting skills is to look at our children's personalities and to try and make sure that, yes, we're challenging them, we're making them sometimes work out of the comfort zone, but we're also giving them opportunities to work well within the comfort zone so they can build their confidence and their self-esteem.
That's a nice piece of advice. So it's about parental attunement, really, and that's something parents can do best.
Yeah, I mean, parents who have got more than one child, they know that, you know, if you've got two children, they're different. They
Absolutely.
Have different ambitions, different things that make them happy, make them sad.
Ray, sorry to interrupt. One of the things that's been in the press very recently is that they're sort of saying, shouldn't schools actually have, I know you've got the PSHE programme, but shouldn't you have actually a head of wellbeing in the same way that other departments would be led? I think Dulwich College has a particular leadership position that covers the whole of wellbeing.
Yeah, well, we do.
Oh, you do.
And we have for years, actually, probably before. And I mean, I think that's where the house system at St George's has always been particularly strong. But we have a student support service, and within that student support service, we've got a school counsellor who we employ. They come in and the children can go and see them completely independent from us. They don't have to ask permission. Whatever goes on between the counsellor is between them and the counsellor until the point that the counsellor feels that that needs to go further with the permission of the child. We also have a member of staff whose specific responsibility is to help those students who are finding their emotional aspects, so not those that need counselling, but those that just are finding school or life just challenging, having someone to go to say, I'm having a problem with this, how do I cope with all the revision I've got, how do I cope with this really difficult relationship I have with my peers or my parents or my siblings. So we have that, and specially trained staff with special skills and particular skills. So most schools will have that in some form or another.
So that's great news for parents who are out there and think you might be holding themselves back from talking about the emotional, psychological side of their child and think they can only approach school about the academic side of things. So you're saying that's absolutely not the case?
No, absolutely not. And it's not just parents as well, because students can approach school, and we try and make sure that's one of the other parts that schools can do. If they have that or they have access to other services, is to make it very clear to students that that is available and they can come and ask for that support at any time. So that people, I think we have changed as a society, we are much more likely to have a discussion about mental health and mental welfare in a way that certainly a generation ago wouldn't have happened.
That's fantastic.
And Ray, I don't know if you've got an opinion on this, but certainly sort of informally amongst parents who've got children who do have mental health issues,
yep.
There seems to be a terrible sort of waiting list, you know, to access mental health help, you know, clinical help locally. I don't know if you've experienced that, but there seems, you know, it's one thing to say parents can access lots of services, but I think in reality, if you've got a child who's feeling terribly anxious or depressed and you have to wait 18 weeks, you know, to see a psychiatrist, it's not helpful, is it?
Yeah, I think that's a slightly different scale of things, and I think that was certainly in my last authority, which was Somerset, was the same. If you want to be able to access the CAMHS team, which is the Children and Young People's Mental Health Services, the tariff, the need of that child has to be very, very significant.
Yes,
it almost has to be a crisis point. And that's just to do with how much resource we have as a society in terms of that very, very high level. And, of course, there's been cutbacks in those types of areas as well. So that does make it difficult. And I completely see that, and I have experienced that both as a teacher and as a parent, where it's difficult. But my point would be is that most of those young people that get to that level of anxiety that they need that intervention, it's the earlier intervention may be able to actually prevent it getting to there in the first place. And part of most of us, when we get anxious, it's because we don't feel that we're listened to or respected, or that we have an issue that we need to resolve, but we don't have the tools to resolve it, and we don't know who to go to. So that builds the anxiety and gets them into those higher levels. So schools, parents, and even peers, you know, there will be other young people around who can offer each other support.
Absolutely.
Just listen to each other, hear what the problem is, and respect the fact that someone else is finding something challenging. Be there for them.
Ray, can we touch on one subject which is, I mean, very much in the news at the moment? I mean, self-harm is something that's being mentioned all the time, and now more commonly with boys as well. What does St. George's at Harpenden or the St. Albans and Harpenden School Network have experience of this too?
I think self-harm in exactly the same way as eating disorder. If you go back about 5 to 10 years, eating disorders was the big anxiety, and self-harm's the big anxiety now. So there does tend to be cycles in the specifics that young people are displaying. What we're seeing as being the things that are coming to the fore at any one particular time. I don't actually think it matters whether it's self-harm or an eating disorder or some other type of mental welfare issue. You know, students running, you know, young people running away from home or getting themselves into socially inappropriate groups where they're taking undue risks. All of those are indicators of an underlying emotional and mental health issue that needs to be resolved somewhere along the line. Most children don't want to self-harm. Most children don't want to get themselves in trouble. Most children want to be successful and have good relationship with others, but sometimes they feel they don't know how to express that and find themselves therefore in an emotional turmoil and find satisfaction in other ways. And they become ingrained behaviours as well, so if they do something and it gives them an emotional response to it, and then they do it again and they get a better sense of satisfaction about it, they will keep doing it.
Ray, I think you've got some very good advice for parents, whether or not they're at St. George's. You can easily access it about self-harm awareness on your website.
Websites are great.
It's wonderful stuff.
Lots of things online.
Yeah. You've got them holding the poster that you sort of have on your website, you know, facts and myths about self-harm, what you can do to help, lots of practical advice about managing anxiety, who you can talk to.
Yep.
I think that's all great. Now, Vert, we're going to have to round up this interview, but very lastly, what every parent in Hearts wants to know, how do you get into St. George's? How do you get your kid into... We've got you on the phone. I think at every dinner party you go to, you know, this is the big question. So what's the answer, Ray?
I suppose if I was being completely candid, live as close to the school cool as you possibly can. Which is probably not a very popular answer, but it's probably the truth. Because one of the things we don't do is we don't select academically in any way. So
it's purely geographical. So the estate agents will be buzzing on the phones tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. It's a real dilemma for parents and I do. But we're really fortunate. In Harpenden, we have got three really fantastic secondary schools.
We certainly do, yeah.
And hopefully, in the next few months and years, we will have a fourth one. Lots of people do want to get into St. George's. If they don't get St. George's, Roundwood Park or Sir John Laws,
absolutely.
Great schools as well. Fantastic staff there.
Yeah.
Lots of opportunities. You know, I just feel privileged to live in a town where you've actually got three great schools. You've not got one that people just don't want to send their children
to. Very fortunate indeed. Ray, thanks so much for talking to us on the Parents Show. It's great news for parents that there's so much thought and support there for children and children's well-being and happiness. It's so encouraging as a parent to know that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for nice to speak to you this evening.
You too.
Thanks
all the
lot.
Best.
Take care.
Okay. Good night.
Bye bye. And we're back to the Parents Show. Hope you're enjoying the chat tonight. We're talking about well-being of our teenage children. And we've just had a great chat with Ray McGovern from St. George's in Harpenden. But we're moving on to Paul Brooks, who is the chairman of Luton Athletics Club. Are you there, Paul?
I am, Cathy. Can you hear me?
Oh, great. I can give you your official title now. Chairman of Luton Athletics Club and Honorary Secretary of Beds Athletics Association. Now, you're a man in charge of a large sports club, which is doing brilliantly. I've heard great things about it. So you obviously come across lots of young people on a weekly basis,
mm-hmm.
who are doing that kind of extracurricular activity, if you like. What are your sort of... I know you've got a son yourself who was very much heavily involved in sport before he went to uni. So what's your sort of feeling about how sport... what the relationship is between sport and teenage well-being?
Well, I actually think sport is very important, I think, to youngsters in general. And I think, as Ray was saying previously, you've obviously got the physical benefits, which I guess are obvious for sport. But it does give very much, I think, mental well-being as well, because I think a lot of what sport gives you is it tends to give you discipline. I don't mean that just in the don't be naughty sense, but the discipline of how you run your life, because... obviously, the kids we have are at school and going for exams and so on, and they have to have the discipline to come down and train two, three nights a week, probably for a couple of hours at a time, and also get their homework done. And generally, they learn to do that, and they learn to how they fit the two together. And you actually see, which I always think is quite interesting, in the summer when we're in exam season, we're also very much in competition season for the track and field activities. You'll often see some of the athletes sat in a little tent, one of these little pop-up tents by the side of the track somewhere. And if you look inside there, what you'll see them doing is sat down with their books. And they will actually be revising for their exams in between coming out and doing their event. So their event will be at 2:30 or whatever. They'll have to come out at some point beforehand to warm up and run it. But around that, when they're there for that day, they are actually doing revision and so on for exams. And I think what that does is it sort of does the two things. It means they are still revising, but equally it gives them a break from it. And I think this is back to your point about mental well-being. I think it's really important for them to be able to get away from that and not maybe just to sit in their room and, if they're revising for 5 hours, after about two, a lot of that isn't going in, frankly, and they need a break. And if they've got something set up to go and do this, rather than just putting the radio on and then maybe an hour and a half later thinking, I must get back to my books, they've actually got that discipline of doing their sporting activity.
Absolutely, that's what Ray was saying. They need to be part of a community, a club. It doesn't matter if it's a sports community or a religious community. It doesn't matter. It's a sense of community and team, being part of a team that matters.
Well, it does, because it is a team. I mean, I think sport generally is a team activity. Athletics is a little bit more individual, but your training group is still a team activity. And when you go to competition, you know, you're part of that wider team as well. And you also get that interaction with adults as well, whether that be coaches or officials. So it become much more rounded. And I think the other thing you find in a lot of sport, I know some are an exception to this, but a lot of sport is actually you find a lot of the kids basically learn the discipline and good manners. You know, in athletics, my son starts athletics, ends up being a rower. You don't get bad language very, very rarely, and it's stamped on if you do.
Yeah, there's a sort of a positive culture surrounding it as well, isn't there? Yeah.
No, very, very much so. And you know, I think what we also find here, and we've talked about that wellbeing and the academic side of it, is a significant number of our athletes, kids, when they get to that age, will go to university. You do actually find that they don't just learn a discipline; it actually benefits them. They will go to university.
And I think you and I were discussing that earlier, that actually universities really value young people who are good at sport.
It does. I mean, often those sort of things on your CV will count beneficially for university entrance. But actually, I mean, we spoke earlier as well, not just university. We were very fortunate at Luton last year to be sponsored by Gibson Dandy, one of the big builders merchants in Luton. But one of the key things that came out of that for us was they actually approached us and said, we like the kids that come out of the club and what they're doing, and we very much like, therefore, to approach you with a view to taking some of them through our apprenticeship scheme. So it's not just if people are going the university route, it's potentially the apprenticeship route, and it's not just universities, but employers that value.
So they're impressed, perhaps, by their discipline, by their commitment and perseverance and all those qualities?
Yeah, absolutely, all of that. Yeah, they do see that people have got that discipline, that commitment, and they can do more than one thing. And they do come out as rounded individuals as well, really, I think, from what the sport gives them and that interaction outside of their day-to-day school life.
Now, surely after the Olympics, I mean, your athletics club must have been buzzing with new entrants and people who wanted to be Jessica Ennis or Mo Farah.
Yeah, it was. There was a big after effect from that. And I think actually one point you mentioned there, I think it's actually leads me to one other point as well, is yeah, you do get a lot of kids will turn up wanting to be Jessica Ennis, Mo Farah, Usain Bolt. And I think one of the things that they need to understand is they may turn up wanting to be Usain Bolt, but actually find out they're a much better javelin thrower. And I think, yeah, my son started in athletics partly because of me, but wasn't really pushed, but wanted a team sport, wasn't particularly aggressive, so maybe football, rugby wasn't his thing, ends up in rowing, and it was ideal. You know, and I think that's the other thing to say is you need to let your child find the sport that suits them. I think Ray touched on this.
He did. It's a very important point, isn't it? Yeah. Trying to find one that suits them in a way that one size doesn't fit all.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. You know, different sports give you different approaches, and you know, some of the sports will let you be yourself. And we've also had some children with, you know, various ranges of autism spectrum, Asperger's and so on, who've come through the club, and that's really helped them as well to come out. And the growth in Paralympic sport, I think, is very important as well for,
absolutely,
you know, people with disabilities and so on.
So tell us a little bit about the club. Where is it actually based? Where are you geographically?
Well, we are based in Luton, but we're actually very much in the south of Luton. We're actually at Stockwood Park, which is just off Junction 10 of the M1. Our entrance to the track is actually not the one you see from the golf course, but the one from off Farley Hill. But interesting, it's been a heart show. We do actually have quite a few members from Harpenden, funny enough, because obviously it's just down the road.
It's only up the road, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're right at that end, and it's funny, a lot of people, even in Luton, don't really know where the track is, because you have to go right down to the end of the entrance road, effectively, from Farley Hill before you will find it. So it's very nicely situated, actually, in a bit of a bowl.
So do lots of these young people come from different, like, how many sort of different schools would they represent?
Probably most of them around Luton.
Okay.
And obviously out in Harpenden and that as well. We do get a variety, and I have to say in Luton that a lot of the schools maybe don't pursue athletics so much. A lot of the schools do football and maybe some cricket and so on. So I think we sort of fill a gap that potentially exists in the school system.
Right. I was going to ask you how the sort of athletics is compatible with school athletics. Like, you know, they train at school and, you know, and then they go to your club to sort of, I don't know, reinforce their skills? Or what's the sort of the value of joining an extra club?
I think there's probably, you know, at a school, your PE teacher is the PE teacher. So generally they will teach all the sports and maybe specialise in some.
Yeah.
We obviously have specific athletics coaches, and that's very noticeable in some of those more, I would call, technical sports. So if you're a thrower, you're throwing a hammer or a discus or javelin or a high jumper or whatever, we tend to have more specialised coaches than probably most of the schools do. And obviously we have all that equipment at the track as well, which not all of the schools do, because you need a big cage for hammer throwing so you don't kill somebody. So I think we provide that sort of coaching that maybe the schools can't do. And typically we do have people, you're right, there's schools athletics, there's the English schools is a very big event. But typically most of the athletes that go to English schools will actually be an athletics club. We'll simply push them forward as well through the county.
And actually,
setup.
I should have asked Ray. Apparently, one of the national sprint records is a child at St George's holds at the moment. Do you know anything about that? No.
You know, I'm not going to claim I do offhand, but I think you're possibly right.
I think
he won
an award last year, one of the Hart School Awards.
I think athletics is quite big at St George's.
Yeah,
one of the fastest
children in England, I think, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'd have to say, to be honest, athletics, I made the mention of schools, and I should probably qualify a bit by saying in Luton, which I think I did, but actually in Hertfordshire, athletics is quite strong, and in the summer, there's usually, a fortnightly schools meeting at our track, which is typically up from the Harpenden area, because it's just up the road again. Schools athletics is actually quite strong in Hertfordshire, certainly compared to Bedfordshire.
And Paul, from age 9, your club, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And happily, I've discovered that even if you're over 40, you can go to your club as a veteran. It's a horrible word, though. Can you change the word from veteran to something else?
Life experienced.
Veteran to master, so I'm now a master.
Master is much better. Much better than veteran. We've had quite a bit of a Facebook and Twitter activity this evening, and while you've been speaking, David Bullock, the deputy head at Verulam School, has retweeted your comment about how schools, universities and employers and apprenticeships all place a high value on a sports background. So that's good news.
Yeah, they do, and it's absolutely true. They very much do.
So Paul, very, very briefly, if people want to come and join your club or make an inquiry, what's their first step?
I think the easiest way, if they want to make an inquiry, is probably just go up to our website. My email address is on there, plus our coaching coordinator. So that's www.lutonac.co.uk. That's probably the easiest way in. Or you could turn up at the club. There's sessions nearly every night of the week, apart from Friday.
Wow, okay.
7 to 9, so you could come along and ask in there, and you know, somebody will pick you up and put you in the right direction.
Tell us you've got some indoor facilities. It's too cold to be doing sport, that's what I think.
We're a hardy bunch. We've got country season in the mud at the moment. No, we don't, actually. I must admit, we don't have...
Okay, so you can wear thermals. Can you wear... I've always wanted to ask this. Can you wear thermals under your sports clothes?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, good. Brilliant.
She's embarrassing us now. You can tell she never did athletics in her life. I did cross country for many years. Thermals, really.
Freeze. Sounds freezing. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much for joining us, Paul. We're all going to be heading down there to the Luton Athletics Club.
You'd be welcome.
Thanks a million,
thanks,
Paul.
Thanks a million.
Thanks, then. Bye.
Welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Tonight we're talking all about teen well-being and the various factors that can contribute to a positive well-being. So we spoke to Paul Brooks from Luton Athletic Club about how sport has such a positive influence. We spoke to the head of St George's, Ray McGovern, about the amount of support that's available in schools. And now we're talking about our bellies. What do we do with our teens to make sure that they have optimal health in order to keep them in the best possible healthy state? So we've got Lauren Gafer on the phone now, and she is the fairy food mother, to talk to us about the role nutrition has to play. Hiya, Lauren.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, you've heard what we've been talking about in terms of nutrition and the role it has to play in our teens. Can you give us your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, been having a think about it, you know, today, and, you know, I do see teenagers in my own practice, and it is a really critical time in a person's life. There's so much, you know, change going on. It's one of the biggest growth spurts in the teenage years. It's comparable to when, you know, you're born and when you're a baby, sort of 0 to 5. So there's a lot going on in the body, hormonally, and you know, in terms of growth and muscle growth and bone growth and brain growth and all of the external factors that you've obviously been touching on as well. So it's a huge, you know, period of change in their lives. And you know, in terms of food intake, it's obviously really important to, you know, stay healthy and ensure that they're getting the, you know, the optimum, you know, level of nutrients, and making sure that they're eating enough of the right foods. And one of the things that sort of changes in, you know, teenage years is that they sort of start to make some of their own decisions about what they're going to eat. So they might go out to eat with friends more, obviously buying food from vending machines and newsagents and what have you, more so than when they were children and when we as parents were feeding them and had more control over what they ate. So, you know, this is where perhaps, you know, they're starting to make not necessarily the right choices in food, and starting to eat too much of the wrong types of fat and too much sugar, and this can have a detrimental effect on their health and their well-being and their levels of concentration and their hormonal balance. So there's obviously plenty that, you know, parents can do to ensure at least that the food that they eat at home.
Yeah, that's about the only guarantee, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think schools, we should have asked Ray, but I think schools have taken huge steps to try and introduce healthy food at lunchtime, haven't they?
Yeah, they're certainly trying, and I think it's come a long way than sort of pre-Jamie Oliver, Turkey Twizzler kind of days. Yes, I think obviously there's still options. Personally, I don't know what's available in secondary schools because my children are primary age, so I'm sort of more involved with, you know, what's available food-wise for that school age. But I know that they are making, you know, a lot more effort to have healthier choices available, vegetable salads. And I'm not entirely sure what the stand is on, you know, fizzy drinks, vending machines, but...
And those are obviously big no-nos, presumably.
Absolutely.
Fizzy drinks, crisp sandwiches, that used to be a favourite in our school.
Crisp sandwiches.
They've just opened a crisp sandwich shop in Belfast. It opened this week, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, fizzy drinks are a big one because in one can, and that's a 330ml can, so never mind 300ml bottles that you can also buy, but in one can of fizzy drinks, so either Coca-Cola or 7-Up or whatever it might be, you're looking at about, you know, 7 to 8 teaspoons of sugar in just that one hit. So, you know, that contributes to obviously obesity, rotting teeth, mood swings, low energy, your PMS. So
for boys and girls, fizzy drinks are a bad idea, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lauren, could we start with breakfast? Now, yeah. I mean, a lot of teenagers aren't particularly interested in breakfast, some parents might say. What is the best possible start to the day that they could have if they are prepared to get up a little bit earlier and not just rush a bowl of Rice Krispies?
Yeah, well, probably something like a boiled egg with some wholemeal toast would be a really good start to the day, or a couple of scrambled eggs. They're a great source of protein. They're a great source of vitamins and minerals that are really good for brain health. And they'll keep their blood sugar levels throughout the morning.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's probably a pretty good start to the day. Or something like a bowl of porridge, which you could add some blueberries to. You could add some natural yogurt too, for some extra protein, some nuts and seeds. That's a good start. You've got the slow release carbohydrate from the oats. So I would say try and stick to low sugar or savory option. You know, even, you know, this might sound a bit controversial, but even a good quality bacon sandwich, so good quality bacon from the butcher and some nice, you know, sourdough toast or something like that,
would
be a good start. So then you're getting the protein and the carbohydrates.
Now, on the topic of bread, Lauren, you know, what is it best that teenagers have, sort of seeded bread? I mean, I don't know anything about, I've heard that things like pumpkin seed and stuff like that can be very beneficial, especially for teenage girls. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Pumpkin seeds are definitely a food that are beneficial for boys and girls because they're a very good source of zinc, which is good for the skin and also good for the hormones, which can both be problematic in teenage years. So I would say, yes, bread's got added pumpkin seeds is a great idea. Definitely, or just additional sort of mixed seed wholemeal loaves are going to be more substantial than your kind of white Kingsmill type of loaf.
Okay. And what about, we've had a question about whether or not, you know, or children or teenagers seem to enjoy their sugary cereals a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do if they're, you know, enjoying their Cocoa Pops or a bit too much, or is it something that it's hard to ration that kind of food at that age?
I mean, perhaps, you know, save them for the weekend, you know, so that they're not having a single day, or if they do insist on having a bowl of sugary cereal, maybe try and balance it with something healthy alongside it, maybe a smoothie. Or even, you know, a boiled egg as well.
And Lauren, is it okay to have an egg for children or teenagers every day?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's no truth to the cholesterol myth that was sort of out there however many years ago. Eggs are a very healthy food, and the cholesterol that is in egg yolk is actually good cholesterol, which your body needs to manufacture hormones. Again, really crucial in your teenage years.
And we have another question in about cheese. Is cheese a fatty thing? I think there's an association that kind of blocks your, you know, I don't know. It's not that healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it is high in saturated fat, although a lot of the research that's coming out these days is contradicting the fat is bad kind of angle that has been around for many years. I would say in moderation, cheeses, I would go for organic if possible.
Okay.
You know, cheese can be, you know, a healthy food because it does contain calcium, it does contain protein, but you wouldn't want to be smothering it on every single meal.
What about the question I wanted to ask about processed meat? You mentioned bacon, but if meat is generally good quality, presumably protein, especially for children playing sport, is a good thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Protein is probably one of the most important things that I would kind of like to get across with regards to teenagers. It is absolutely vital food for them. And meat is a very good, you know, source of protein. And you know, the best quality that you can afford is going to be preferable, because there's a lot of, you know, issues with the way that conventional meat is processed and farmed these days. So there are a lot of antibiotics and a lot of hormones added to the animal. So, you know, you want to try and stick to, you know, we know where it's come from, grass-fed, organic, you know, as much as you possibly can. Obviously, that's not necessarily possible for everybody, but there are cheaper cuts of meat that you can buy from the butcher, you know, to slow cooking, or you could buy a whole chicken from the butcher rather than buying chicken breasts. So there are ways of making good quality meat cheaper,
okay,
if that's a problem. But yes, side protein is really, really important for teenagers, the, you know, for their growth and for their, you know, for their brain and for their concentration.
Great, Lauren, we're going to have to wrap it up now for this evening. Just quickly, alcohol for teens, how detrimental is it to their health?
Very detrimental. You know, starting young with alcohol is going to really affect their liver health later on, create a fatty liver, which can lead to further disease. So I would say, you know, try and steer clear for as long as possible, because the longer you're drinking alcohol, the further the, you know, disease can progress.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lauren, if people want to get in touch with you, parents that are listening, and they want a sort of a private consultation, how do they do that?
They can either go to my website, which is thefairyfoodmother.com. I also have a Facebook page, which is The Fairy Food Mum.
Lovely.
And all of my contact details
okay.
are on there.
Lovely. Sorry, Lauren, we're running out of time. We'll put that up on our Facebook page right now. Thanks so much for joining
us.
Thanks a
million. Thanks.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.